Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing getting your money etiquette right.
Joel, you know, this episode reminds me of one we had several weeks ago with Gorick, where he spoke on the unspoken rules of success. And there are these things that some people do, some people don't do in life, and it allows certain individuals to get ahead in life. Specifically, in his case, he was speaking about your career.
Yeah, and how nobody tells you those things most of the time. You got to figure it out. He's trying to help people figure it out earlier.
Exactly. You kind of pick up on it naturally. Some folks do, but then some folks just don't. Some folks have no clue that, oh, I should be sending a follow-up email. Oh, I should proactively ask, like, what can I do to make your life better, boss? Like that kind of thing, right? I think the same thing is true when it comes to money etiquette. There are some folks who are more, who, you know, let's be honest, they have a higher emotional quotient, perhaps.
Yeah.
And they're able to just pick up on small little hints and clues and just how people are responding to them when they're talking about money, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But then there's some folks who truly have no clue. And so we are talking about money etiquette today because we want this to be something that we are talking about more often. Because if this is you, you want to stop making your friends uncomfortable every time you talk about saving money or pinching pennies or being frugal. These are all things that can be talked about well, but it does come down to what approach you take.
Right. And sometimes people decide not to talk about money at all because they think that's the right etiquette. We disagree on that, too. We'll get to that later in this episode. So this is basically How to Money Emily Post edition on today's show. We'll get to that. But Matt, I wanted to mention really quickly, so everybody knows that we love craft beer. Today on the show, we're drinking IPA by Barrel Brewing. But I wanted to quickly mention that I think for the first time ever, I balked at purchasing a beer. I walked away from the cooler and I didn't take that 4-pack in my hands because the price point was just too high. And so, I don't know. I wonder, even
prices have gone up I mean, just even over the past few years, we've seen the price. First of all, it's gone from 6-packs to 4-packs,
right,
which that alone really pisses some people off. I don't mind because
same amount of liquid, but there's a lot of 16-ounce 4-packs.
Yeah, but it is a higher. Typically, it's a higher quality beer, and I can appreciate that.
Right, but the thing is, like, even with something that I love, I have a limit, and so I think it was $33 or $34 for a 4-pack of this delicious sounding sour that was like really highly rated on Untappd, and I was like, man, I really want to try it, but it turns out that I was like, it's just, to me, it's not worth that. Like, I don't want to try it that badly. There are some really great beers that I can get for $15 or $16 or $18 for a 4-pack, and even that, like, took me a while to be feel comfortable spending that. But yeah, I was like, I went over to the single section to see if I could find a single can of that, even though that would be like $9. But at least then I'm like, all right, I get to taste it.
Yeah,
but I don't have to, you know, put out all the money.
I was going to have to remind you here for a second. I was going to say, Joel, like, craft beer is our craft beer equivalent, dude. Like this is something that we splurge on.
Right. But even in that, there's got to be a limit, right? If your BMW is your craft beer equivalent, that's okay. But do you have to go all the way to the M3 edition that costs like $30,000 more? No, probably not. So, I mean, like, I think even within the things that we love, there are limits. And it's okay to say, you know what? Today, I'm not feeling it.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe in a few months, you'll get used to it. Because here's the thing. What if that was going to be, like, in your opinion, that could have been the best beer in the entire world?
If I knew,
and you would not have known because you didn't even give it a shot.
If I knew that that was what it was going to be, I would have paid it.
Okay.
But I was like, I mean, it's another beer and it rates well, but I don't know. So I'll look again in the single section, see if I can find it next time, because I don't mind spending maybe $9 on one great beer.
Well, if it's not that great, I guess that's the thing that you're trying to
avoid.
That's
the risk you're taking,
right? Like,
for sure.
You want to avoid spending a ton of money on 4 beers where you're saying to yourself, man, that really wasn't worth it. I can have an equivalent quality beer for maybe $20 for a 4-pack.
Yeah, if I'm underwhelmed on a $30-something beer, I'm not going to be happy.
You're going to be like, hey, man, you want to go and have these with me on this particular beer?
I'll drop off on your doorstep. But, okay, so I know we've all got that price point. I just want our listeners to know too, we, as the How to Money hosts, even have our price limits, even in the category that we love to spend money on.
It's still worth being price conscious.
Yeah, I still bought some good beers that day, but
good,
just not that particular one. All right, let's keep moving on though, Matt. Let's get to the topic at hand. We are discussing getting your money etiquette right. And Matt, speaking of unwillingness to spend, I don't really spend a whole lot of money at fancy restaurants. I think we talked about this not too long ago. The one time my wife and I did go to one of those fancy restaurants where you can watch the chef cook, I was a little nervous about the bill I was going to receive. We like good food, but the super fancy restaurant culture just isn't really our jam. And like, if there's like 3 forks on the table, I'm probably walking out of there. Because one, I don't even really know like which direction you go in. Is it out to in? Is that right?
I don't even know, man.
Okay. So,
you're like, what's that fork doing at the top of my plate? I don't know.
You're more refined than me. I thought you might have known, but.
I mean, I enjoy, Kate and I like going to fancier, nicer restaurants. But the actual etiquette that goes into the niceties of which fork I'm supposed to use with what course, I'm less refined in that way. My palate's refined, but my etiquette maybe could use some work.
Gotcha. So maybe you and I, neither of us are the people to be giving etiquette advice on today's show, but
we know money.
We're going to push through. We're going to try anyway.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about different money conundrums that pop up in all of our lives. Stuff like splitting the bill, tipping, going on dates, and more. We want you to know ahead of time, there's a lot of subjectivity around this topic. So you're going to hear our opinions today. You're going to hear our thoughts. But we hope that they're helpful in informing you and giving you some direction when it comes to those tough money etiquette decisions. But just know, too, these aren't like the Ten Commandments handed down from on high from the How to Money host. These are actually, these are kind of how we treat these things and how we think you should think through maybe these money etiquette conundrums. They're meant to be more like ballpark answers than like specific facts.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Ten Commandments, so because I think that's so true. I think there are a lot of folks who believe that there are some money rules or principles that pretty much are etched in stone. They feel that there's either a right way and, you know, then there's a wrong way to do things. But so much of money is personal, and not only personal, but there are social expectations and different pressures placed on us. And so sometimes we're not sure of what the right path for us to take is. And so, for instance, if it's already included on the bill, do I still tip extra? It's helpful to think about this kind of stuff before the bill hits the table so you don't end up, guilt tipping or just, pulling a money etiquette faux pas.
Just running away.
You can't, yeah, you don't want to dine and dash. And also, you know, we want you to be confident that you have the money in your budget to actually cover that generous tip if you so choose to. And so our goal for this episode is to help you to think about the right way to think about these things. We want to help you to navigate these money etiquette waters.
No doubt. I think of us as like the third base coach in baseball, Matt. You've seen him give all the weird signs to the person at the plate, like tugging on their ears, touching their nose. And that's kind of what we're doing here. We're like making some signals.
Dude, I don't watch baseball.
I know you don't. It's playoff time.
But
though,
I do. Oh, so. Is it?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
But we all know about your lack of dedication to really any sport besides soccer. But speaking of soccer, soccer is a very European sport. And my favorite model of tipping comes from Europe. Over there, tipping...
I like tipping the South American way. Soccer's big there, too.
Well, I just wanted to just to briefly mention that we have kind of a unique system here in the States. The lack of tipping actually across the pond and the increased wages and the cost of the meal is just a much more comfortable way for many people to do things. Matt, I know you and I maybe disagree a little bit on this one, but you kind of know what you're paying for, and you know that the server is being paid a reasonable salary. Unlike here, where tips are the primary source of income, like that person who's serving your food might be making $1.50 an hour, and then you feel a little more guilty about how much you should be tipping. And granted, yeah, if that's the case, you should be tipping well. But in Europe, you know, there's not that element at play.
I think for me, honestly, it's because of my entrepreneur background, where I knew that if I didn't work, I wasn't getting paid.
Right.
I think I am more comfortable, for instance, with the American way, where servers, waiters, where their base rate isn't that high, and it is predominantly, you know, focused on the tips.
Yeah,
I think that's why.
I mean, I remember as a kid going to one grocery store where the person would bring your groceries out, and you would tip them directly, and then going to this other grocery store, and tips weren't allowed. And so, I don't know, there's a different feel as a consumer, as a customer, when you go someplace and tips are involved or tips are off the table. And I feel like right now, in this environment, part of what makes it more and more difficult, these conversations around money etiquette, is that tipping is expected in more and more places.
Yeah, that's so true, man. I think some of the ambiguity around tipping is certainly something that leads to the confusion around tipping specifically. But let's go ahead and dive into conversations around money in general, because I think, you know, broadly speaking, let's just talk about how we talk about money, because everyone knows that, you know, money, it is an uncomfortable topic for most folks. If you try to bring it up, you might get shut down.
Yeah, you want to make someone squirm in their seat, like start talking about their income.
How much do you make, by the way?
What's your budget look like, man?
Honestly, like you might even hurt a friendship. And so we've got a few tips to make those money conversations less perilous and just more inviting. So the first little bit of advice we'd give to folks here is to make sure that you are reading the room, and definitely avoid complaining about money in front of people maybe that are struggling with their finances. So for instance, if you clearly make more than a friend, or you know that they, you know, they don't nerd out about money stuff, just make sure that you're being careful about the conversation and make sure that you're being a little more casual. And plus, regularly complaining, that's kind of a not awesome way to do things anyway, right?
Right.
So like complaining about first world problems, you know, like work piling up after a week-long vacation to the Bahamas. That's going to be a bit tone deaf to a friend who can't afford that time off.
Hey, how was that vacation? It was great, but man, am I backlogged at work now. And it's like,
I kind of wish I wasn't able to go on the vacation. It's like, oh, really? Yeah, tell me how nice that is. If you really want to get a conversation started with somebody, I think just starting with like a cool article that you came across, or just like an interesting tidbit of information you recently picked up, and just get the conversation started by, you know, hopefully you're able to pique their curiosity. So definitely don't complain, and make sure that your approach is a little more kind of money philosopher rather than kind of this intense budget drill sergeant. I think for a lot of folks who feel like that they kind of have a solid financial footing underneath them, they can approach some of those conversations with a, you should be doing this, you shouldn't be doing that. And maybe instead, they just want to talk to their buddy, you know, like they just want to talk to their girlfriend. They don't necessarily want to hear all the different things they could be doing differently with their money.
Yeah, as a husband over the years, been married 11 years, and I have realized, it's taken me a while, that oftentimes when my wife is having an issue, like she doesn't want me to fix it. She really just wants me to listen, empathize, hear, and sit there with her in whatever problem she's going through. And I think the same thing is true when we talk about money with other people. When people either bring up an issue or when you start to talk about money with them, in order to keep them from shutting down or from completely derailing the conversation, usually it takes just being a little more empathetic and, you know, just hearing what they have to say, being less prescriptive. That can come later, but especially in the beginning, I think, yeah, reading the room and recognizing when someone is basically screaming at you from inside their brain, hey, no, 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 that's not what I'm looking for, so that you can calm it down and bring it back to like, oh, okay, yeah, I love talking, like, because we're all about talking about money. We don't want you to never talk about money with people. We think it's really important to have that conversation, but it doesn't always have to be do this, not that.
Exactly. I think figuring out whether this is a I'm sorry, that really sucks conversation, or if this is a okay, let's see how we can fix this conversation, I found that to be incredibly valuable in my relationship with my wife.
Right, right. And so what about talking about money at the workplace? That's like that's different than talking to your significant other or talking to a friend. You'll want to take, we would say, a similar low-key approach, at least at first. You know, we want you to talk about money, but we don't want you to get in trouble. And sometimes in the workplace, if you're talking about maybe an off-topic convo, like talking about your personal finances, that could be something that your boss overhears, and they're like, "No, no, no, shut it down." And you'll find that most coworkers actually don't want to go there with you. But we also think that doesn't mean you shouldn't try.
Sure.
Read those cues, though, and then shut off the conversation quickly if that's the response you're getting. If you're getting kind of stonewalled or you can tell that person is uninterested, don't keep pushing the envelope. But yeah, you'll likely find that some of the folks you talk to will be interested. And it can be fun to connect with your coworkers on that level, especially if personal finance is super exciting to you, super interesting to them. You listen to How to Money, so you probably are interested at least to some degree. But yeah, I think it's really important in that process to read the room again and make sure that you're not pushing a conversation that isn't wanted.
Yeah, and unlike your friends, your coworkers can't just stop seeing you. You know, like you still have to continue working on that project, whereas your friends can, I don't know, maybe stop returning your texts or your calls. And so you want to make sure that you're being sensitive to the different topics that you're bringing up around them. But okay, what about compensation specifically? Because I think that's a workplace conversation that, again, I don't. Hopefully, we don't say this too much. We don't want you to completely avoid these conversations, but you got to be careful, especially when it comes to the compensation, because obviously this can get pretty awkward.
Hey, how much money you make? Yeah, that's always a way to start it.
But we do want to talk about it because part of what we're doing here is destigmatizing this talk around money. But we would recommend that you only do it with different employees, maybe who you would call friends, where you've established some trust, and also make sure that you have a good reason for asking. You know, like I wouldn't kind of go at it with a how much do you make? Question. Approach it maybe from a standpoint of curiosity. This is when, you know, your delivery, how you breach the topic, this is everything. You know, you could approach it from the standpoint of being concerned. Maybe, like, seriously, maybe you're not, you're a little bit worried about how much you're getting paid versus the value that you're actually bringing the company. And obviously, knowing someone else's salary would be able to provide you some helpful knowledge when it comes to asking for a raise in the future. And of course, it's worth pointing out that you want to make sure that you keep whatever they share private and confidential. Honestly, it might even be best to kind of have the conversation off-premise, not just like in the break room for everybody to hear as you as they're walking by. Maybe instead you are able to grab a beer after work. But these conversations really can help you or your coworker make more money. It's not just about what it can do to help you out, but it is important to be careful with your approach and your tone as you enter into some of these conversations.
Yeah, Matt, you know, it's interesting. My friend, our friend, Jesse, who runs the blog and the podcast called Best Interest, he and I were just chatting on Twitter the other day. Well, he mentioned, hey, I just got a massive raise like a few months back. And he kind of mentioned that it's been made a huge impact on his ability to invest more money. I was like, that's awesome. How'd you do it? And so he shared some really good tips for how he did it. And one of the things I wanted to know was, well, how did you know you were underpaid? And he said part of it was just water cooler talk, honestly, with some fellow employees. And so I think, yeah, that's the way to do it. Kind of like, well, what are new employees making? Like, you want to kind of try to get to the bottom of that in an ethical and above board way. And he was able to do that, and it made a big impact on his ability to then go to HR and say, hey, I feel like I'm not getting paid what I'm worth. I've been here 2 years. People that are just starting out are getting paid as much or more than I am.
Bum, 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 bum.
And they were like, sorry, bud, we're not paying you more. And then he said, okay, cool. I'm going to, you know, he didn't tell them this, I don't think, but he's like, I'm going to go hunt for jobs. And he ended up getting a job offer that was more lucrative than what he was currently making. Nice. So he went back and he was like, guys, I think I'm going to take this job. And they were like, well, wait a second, don't leave. We'll pay you more.
Yeah.
And so that is the classic tried and true way to make more money where you work. But it does involve that difficult conversation sometimes mm-hmm. that most of us don't want to have. But if you want to make more money, if you want to grow your salary and you want to get paid what you're worth, oftentimes it takes having that uncomfortable conversation. And I will say, how do money etiquette rules dictate that it is okay to start that conversation if you do it the right way?
That's right. All right. We've covered money conversations in general. We've talked about it within the workplace as well. After the break, we're going to dive into money conversations, money etiquette in social situations, including dating. We'll get to all of that right after this break.
And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're back from the break. We're still talking about money etiquette, and we are going to get to etiquette tips when it comes to dating. That's fraught with peril for lots of people. It's like, how do I navigate these waters? But Matt, you have plenty of experience in that area. You were almost the Bachelor on season 3 back in the day, right?
Yeah, I was the first Bachelor to have actually gotten voted off the island.
I don't think that's how it works.
Am I getting my shows mixed up?
I think so. That was a Survivor. These were
pretty sure I was married when the Bachelor first started. Dog,
it's really good you weren't on that show then.
Yes. So,
but all right, let's start off. Let's talk about restaurants and tipping. You know that moment when your date is waiting quietly while you figure out what the tip is going to be. Well, those are awkward situations. And it's, Matt, it's very much like the way I feel at a fancy restaurant when there's three forks. I have no idea what to do. I just feel out of place. But yeah, how do you navigate that situation? Well, like, how do you do that? Plus, like I said before, so much has changed when it comes to tipping. It seems like it's suggested. It's being suggested in more and more places. Everybody flips over the iPad and they've got preset tipping amounts and you're like, huh, what? I didn't think this would be, I didn't used to tip here. And it's a little nerve wracking. So with cash disappearing, it's becoming more and more of a problem. We're all paying digitally and we're getting tips suggested at us right and left. And then
which to a certain extent I appreciate, because there's some folks out there who aren't as good at the math, and so for those folks I think they see it as welcome relief. But things have gotten a little out of hand.
Yeah, and there are some places where they were just no tip zones before, and now it's like, oh wait,
no now? Tip zone.
We tip here now? Okay. Yeah. All right. I feel like if Seinfeld was still around, they would totally do a show on this.
You are in the no tip zone. Sorry.
But and then when it comes to choosing no tip or custom tip, those boxes are like super tiny at the bottom of the screen. Like, they don't want you really looking there.
It's like the checkbox at the bottom of the opt-out email, like when you're signing up for a new product.
Exactly. It's like the pop-up on the website, and you're like, where is the X button?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Like, lately, they've gotten even more nefarious about that. Like, the designs of the background make it impossible to see. I swear, I stared at one the other day.
Either that or you're just getting older.
No, dude. It was a Spotify ad. I swear it was a Spotify ad, and I go with the, you know, the non-premium Spotify, and I could not find it. I was like, where the heck is the X? I'm not going to agree to this. And it completely blended in with the artwork in the top corner. They're being a little too sneaky about it.
Right. Okay, so how do we deal with kind of this newfound environment when it comes to tipping, Matt? Like, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, another thing too, man, I'm just always curious to see what those tip suggestions are, you know? Like, tip creep? That's totally real. Now, with a lot of businesses and restaurants changing how they serve you, I think this changes the equation as well. So, for instance, like, should we still tip the same? Even if my restaurant is short on servers and like it feels like I'm basically serving myself.
Like, you basically went to Piccadilly instead of,
yes,
you know, it's like a buffet.
That's a lot different of a scenario. That's a much different experience. Even at a local ice cream place, the suggested tip amounts are 20, 25, and 30%, which is completely ludicrous. That should be our
borderline criminal, I would say.
For ice cream, yeah. And honestly, even at some coffee shops, you'll just see like a basic like $1 or $2, $3 amount, that kind of thing. That might mean you're tipping 100% on that cup of coffee. And here, let's be clear. We're not trying to be cheapskates. Baristas rock. They can work really hard. But it is not a full service, like high-end dining experience. But I think because those options are being presented, it can like guilt individuals into tipping more than maybe you otherwise would have, just because you're kind of stuck right there in the moment and they're looking at you.
I think if that barista gives me 3 spoons to choose from to stir my cream in the coffee, I would be willing to tip more.
You're gonna always reach for the golden, or the golden spoon, silver spoon. What you gonna do?
I mean, I'll go either way. Right. I'm not picky. But yeah, so what do we suggest? I guess in this new tipping environment, we would say, one, like Matt said, don't be a cheapskate. Don't be cheap. We'd rather stay at home and eat than to eat out and to not tip well. That is, you know, impacting somebody else's livelihood by sitting down, eating the meal, taking up their time, and then not tipping as much as you should.
If you can't do it properly, don't do it at all, right?
Exactly. And with many small businesses still on the road to recovery because of the pandemic, purposefully opting to tip more whenever and wherever you can is a great strategy. Like, we think you should intentionally choose and try to be more generous when it comes to tipping.
I mean, we talked about this a lot back last spring, when all the restaurants were shutting down. It's just like, hey, make sure you're going out there and supporting your favorite restaurants, because you want to make sure, granted, this is before the PPP loan legislation went through.
But even that wasn't enough for a whole
for
lot of,
some folks, sure. It was not enough. I completely agree. But getting out there, getting those gift certificates, making sure you're tipping extra, you know, on top of whatever your order is. We're all about that and making sure that we are being active in our communities. But at the same time, You got to find that balance, just like you were talking about earlier with the beer. We splurge on craft beer, but at a certain point, you got to figure out what's reasonable for you.
Right, yeah. We were even suggesting use some of that stimulus money to help your local economy for sure. But we would say, too, make that choice ahead of time and don't let those subtle tip nudges be the deciding factor in the moment. Like the iPad gets turned around in your direction and you're like, huh? Like deer in the headlights. What do I tip now?
You clench up.
Exactly. I've been there. And so I realized, you know what? I have to have a plan of action before I get to this point. Or I hesitate in the moment. So yeah, we would say don't be afraid to craft your own tip amount instead of using the suggested preset tip amounts.
Yeah.
And when you kind of have like, you know what, if it's a coffee shop, I tip 10%. If it's this place, I tip 15%. If it's this place, I tip 25%. Or potentially even more if the service is awesome. You know, it might be worth it to have multiple categories for how much you're tipping. Those simple, quick interactions, you might want to tip less. For those bigger ones, for those finer dining experiences, those three fork restaurants, you might want to tip more.
Totally. Yeah, let's talk about eating out with friends, because this can kind of be a tough etiquette scenario that you might find yourself in, because we've probably all been in the place where we're trying to maybe save a little more money than our friends are. You're like over there ordering water, one of the cheaper items on the menu.
Can I get the water and the Cheerios, please?
And then there's that one friend who's just like, hey, let's just split the bill down the middle. It totally sucks to be in that situation. But we feel this is an important lesson that we need to learn from, because it's, like you said, Joel, it's tougher to have this conversation after they've made that suggestion. It's tougher to make that decision after they've spun the little iPad around and it feels like you're in the hot seat. And so it might sound awkward to have this conversation about picking up your own tab ahead of that dinner out, but just being upfront about it is going to be the winning move. Go with that, you know, the slightly awkward chat earlier instead of the really awkward one later on. And another thing too, if you are, you know, and you're like, oh no, like it's just fun to split the bill. Well, not everybody thinks it's fun. If you're the one making that suggestion, we would recommend for you to think through, okay, what did everyone order? Like, did we order equivalent food or equivalent drinks? Because you want to make sure that if you are suggesting that you're being fair.
Basically. Yeah, I think another really important thing to do, Matt, you're right, have the conversation ahead of time with that friend. Hey, last time you suggested splitting the check, and guess what? Here's where I'm at with money, and here's what I'm trying to accomplish. And so for me, like, I'm totally down with going out to eat, but I'm trying to spend a whole lot less. So this time, can we just pay our own way? I think that's a great conversation to have and like really shouldn't make anybody uncomfortable. That's understandable. I think your friend will appreciate the fact that you mentioned and that you actually kind of opened up a little bit about what's going on with you personally, what your goals are. And you know what? You just started a money conversation right there too,
totally.
Which is cool. And that could lead to some more interesting combos down the road. Potentially even prodding them to, ask you some questions about, wait a second. Wait, you're investing for retirement? Like, are people supposed to be doing that? And it could end up helping your friend out actually
exactly.
In the long run. I think it's also okay to make an alternative suggestion. Your friend might have suggested a nice dinner out, but you might say, you know what? I don't even want to go out and drink water and get the cheapest thing on the menu. I'd rather just stay at home in order to reach my savings goal. And that's okay too, but be honest about that as well. So maybe say, hey, my eating out budget is really tiny right now. I've exhausted it for the month. How about you come over for a morning coffee hang instead? Your friend might be like relieved too, right? Because they just want to hang out with you. They might not necessarily care about the fine dining experience. They might have like a lot of respect for you that you're letting your values drive your spending decisions. And so, yeah, I think it's just important to have alternative suggestions ready. Just because that one thing they suggested didn't work out doesn't mean you can't offer up something else. Hey, let's go for a hike on Saturday morning. Like, let's get outside.
Go for a walk. How about you come over here? Let's have some coffee here and then we'll go for a walk.
Exactly.
Instead of us meeting at a coffee shop.
Especially if like you make good coffee. Like, I don't necessarily, I kind of go French press and I think it tastes fine, but like, I don't know.
There's nothing wrong with French press.
My standards aren't high, but if you make like good pour over coffee or something, your friend might be excited to come over and
like, oh, give me some of that AeroPress broth.
Right. Yeah. Taste your stuff.
Okay. So what's funny is that Kate and I are literally, we literally just did this. We are going to be having dinner with a couple, they're college friends of ours, and we invited them over to our house before and this is going to happen tomorrow. And we're going to have a drink at the house before we go out to dinner. And it's, for us, it's kind of less about being super frugal. But fact is, four drinks at home is going to be a fraction of the cost of actually going out and all of us getting a cocktail while we're out.
Truth.
But then again, it comes down to the conversation. How are we going to split the actual dinner bill? And I feel like we know them well enough to, like, I'm going to be the one probably to suggest that, hey, let's just split it down the middle. But just, you know, given the conversation that we're having right now, like, I am instead of like suggesting it, I'm going to maybe ask it and be like, hey, are y'all cool if we just split it down the middle? Because I think the act of asking rather than suggesting, even that right there can kind of open the conversation up to where someone feels a little less pressure to just go along with it, as opposed to being like, well, actually, do you mind if we kind of separate out? Maybe they would say that they're on a budget. Regardless, you kind of want to set the table for just a nice, healthy conversation.
I thought your classic move was when the bill came to go to the restroom for an extended period of time, maybe climb out the window.
You've never actually done that, right?
No, I've never done that. That'll cost you a friend real quick.
You keep saying this almost like, I mean, you say it with much confidence, and it sounds like almost experience.
No, okay. Never pulled that one. Never done the dine and dash. Never done that to a friend either.
Good.
That would be the opposite of etiquette. So
that would be cheap.
Don't do that. All right, let's talk to Matt about just kind of other maybe money things that pop up. This one is something that we've experienced as parents. Let's say, like, what's the etiquette surrounding contributing to a gift for a teacher at, like, your kid's school? I mean, I feel like similarly to planning ahead, you have to make sure you have room in the budget for stuff like that. And you have to know that those quote-unquote unexpected expenses are going to happen, right? I think it's easy to get blindsided and say, wait, I don't have money for that, like, and you didn't know it was coming. But really, those are the things that we shouldn't cheap out on, and we should give something towards. And, like, I think just setting aside something to the tune of $20 a month for requests like teacher gifts or other things in that similar vein is a good idea. And I think that takes a whole lot of stress out of these requests for money because, yeah, they don't really come out of left field, even though we feel like they do. So plan ahead for them, give accordingly, instead of, like, getting that stress ulcer every time that email comes through and you're like, am I supposed to give money to that now?
What am I supposed to do?
And even just something simple, like, for instance, my son's school, he's two, he's going to the school a few days a week, and they had a pumpkin patch, and we took the time, one, to go volunteer and help set it up, but then we're going to buy an overpriced pumpkin there because of the good that that money does. Like, I could go to Aldi and get me a $5 pumpkin, but I would rather spend the extra money, and this money goes to literally benefit his school and refugee families.
There you go.
And I'm like, I'm not cheaping out of the pumpkin. Like, of course I'm putting my money there, but I have budgeted money for these kinds of purposes, and really that's what it takes so that you're not, like, yeah, getting freaked out every time you get asked for money at something like this.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that you should feel compelled to give to everything, right? Like, I think one of the other etiquette conundrums is when people ask for money in the moment, and even if it's not to our faces, right? I'm talking about the rise of GoFundMes online that you might see on social media. You'll see them on Facebook. For instance, if someone has a birthday coming up, they might be raising money for a cause that they care about, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be giving to that particular organization.
Oh, man, I see it all the time now, and I'm like, oh, sorry, it doesn't mean I don't love you, and it doesn't mean I don't wish you a happy birthday, but I'm not contributing to it.
Right.
Well, and I don't feel guilted into that.
Like, it also makes me think of, too, like, giving money, like, in the grocery store checkout line. That is not something I participate in because almost all of my giving is 100% pre-planned, and it is funneled towards the organization that I know and that I love. So this is an example where I think we believe it's better to be proactive and intentional with our giving rather than being, you know, passive and casual about it. We don't want you to be cheap. Do give your money, but just make sure instead that you're taking the time to look up and research charities, and you can do that via a site like Charity Navigator. That's a fantastic site that we've mentioned multiple times here on the show where you can go online, you can look up the different organizations, you can see how much of the money that you give to them, how much of it goes towards expenses, how much of it actually goes towards the cause.
Yeah, towards fulfilling that mission. Yeah,
exactly. But but kind of going back to what you said, Joel, you kind of have to find that balance between being intentional and proactive. I feel like this is a perfect example of you and me because I feel like you're a little more, you know, a little going, you know, shooting from the hip a little bit. whereas I'm like overly structured and, or, you know, organized. But at the same time, I feel like I do need to allow some margin in my life when it comes to maybe something like a overpriced pumpkin.
Yeah.
I have to be okay with that.
I think there's like a difference in how I feel too when I give to something spur of the moment. Usually, like, and I don't mind setting, I think it's okay too, set aside in your budget some money for spur of the moment gifts if that's your thing. But for me, at least, they provide a really small, like, feeling that I've done something good for a really short period of time. But when I have pre-planned my giving and I give it consistently to the organizations I already know and love and am connected to the work they're doing, that feeling, the way I feel about where my money is going, it lasts longer. Really, it's up to each individual how they want to give their money.
Yep.
But just be prepared in advance. Know that you're going to get maybe asked at the grocery store and be comfortable. Like, you're not a cheapskate. You're not a bad person if you decide not to give in the moment consistently. Like, if you always say no to that, that doesn't make you a bad person if you feel like you're being generous.
There you go.
With your money overall.
Totally.
And let's talk about generosity, Matt, when it comes to like giving or gift giving with family and friends. We are in October, and so people are planning for the holidays, and they're
if not, you should be, right? Because of shipping delays.
Exactly. We talked about that a while back. You should be actively looking to buy your Christmas presents now, not waiting till the last minute because of some of those shipping delays leading to product shortages. But this is really another uncomfortable spot that a lot of people find themselves in. And there are bound to be some awkward moments for lots of families who haven't communicated expectations well around holiday gift giving. And this is just another instance where it makes the most sense to get ahead of things and to clearly let your family know that, one, you love them, and two, that maybe you're also working really hard to finally destroy your student loans once and for all.
You can do both of those things at the same time.
I can love you and destroy my student loans. But that means I also am not going to buy you a $50 gift.
And it doesn't mean that's going to destroy our relationship. Exactly. Because we're talking about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's really what it comes down to, right? Like, maybe instead of giving those expensive gifts this year, opt to exchange time spent together or do some sort of secret Santa. But those are the conversations you probably want to start having now. You want to communicate the expectations, just like you're planning ahead in your budget. Plan ahead and communicate well with your family so that you don't show up on Christmas morning or whatever it is and you've got nothing in hand and you're like, well,
I'm saving money, guys.
Exactly. Don't you get it? But if you talk about that and open up those lines of communication far in advance, it's less of a shock. It feels less like you just weren't thoughtful, and it feels more like, wait, they're being intentional here. We want to help them support them in that goal.
Yeah. So on the note of gift giving, another real quick one here. What are your thoughts as far as the etiquette surrounding giving money as a gift? And as you think about this, I'll say, as a half Korean who has received my fair share of just straight up cash gifts from my mom's friends, fully Korean, I feel like it's maybe more of an Asian thing. But like, dude, like, as a practical guy that likes to talk about money, I 100% welcome cash. For one of our kids, like when they're born, like when a baby's born or for a wedding, it's easy for me to lash on to the 100% practical side of that. But what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so I think money is actually a better etiquette move than giving a gift card. And that's because I do. And I think it feels the opposite because a gift card feels more specific.
Yeah, it feels like you thought about it a little bit.
I know you like this store, so go buy yourself something nice.
But you get to pick something from that store. I'm not going to order you a meal. That's too personal.
But when you look at the stats and you see the amount of money that goes unspent on gift cards each year, people get gift cards, they get tossed in the drawer, they never get spent.
Yeah.
But do you ever not spend a $100 bill that comes into your life or
cash
a $50
money.
Bill? Yeah, it's cash. You're going to spend it. So I think from that aspect, like, I think the better etiquette is to give cash. And I think we can like bring less stigma around that and start giving cash more. I think the thing is to include a note that is thoughtful.
Oh, okay.
And that says, hey, I know you, and I know that this is something you'd like, and I don't know what you're going to spend it on, maybe this, or this, but I think that helps make it feel a little more personal and a little less like you just didn't know what they liked or what they care about.
Right. I like that, dude. I like that a lot. I think you could even include some stats about the percentage of gift cards that go untapped.
Yeah, just to convince them that you made the right move.
Yeah. This guy's a total dweeb, a total nerd. But that is how we roll. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But after the break, we're finally going to get to talking about money and relationships when it comes to dating. We'll get to that right after this.
Okay, we're back. We're going to get to dating and marriage in just a second, I promise. But first, I want to talk about, we just talked about gift giving. Matt, let's talk about lending money to family and friends, because that is another zone of money that is fraught with peril. And it's like, well, what's the etiquette there when someone I love asks me for money? So we would suggest to really try at all costs to avoid being the borrower or the lender in this scenario whenever possible.
Yeah.
And if you're the one borrowing money from a friend, pay them back as soon as possible, or at least when you say you're going to. If you're like, hey, I'm going to get paid 2 weeks from now, I promise that $100, it's hitting you back.
Hit you up at the end of the month.
Exactly. Friendships can easily get damaged if you don't. And if you're the one who's lending the money, it's also helpful to not think of it as a loan. So if your friend comes to you and says, hey, let me, can I borrow $100? And you say yes, don't expect to get paid back. Think of it as a gift that you're making to the person that you care about instead. And if you somehow get paid back, it's icing on the cake, because if you don't view it that way and that person abuses your trust and doesn't pay you back in a timely fashion, it's going to be frustrating and it could cause damage to the relationship. But if you mentally are thinking of it like, you know what, I'm going to gift them some money. It's no big deal if I don't get this money back. And also, don't lend any money that you can't afford to lend. If you can't afford it, just be honest and say, listen, I don't have the money to give you right now. I love you, but how else can I help you out?
Yes, I love that so much, dude. This also makes me think of co-signing, because this is kind of another form of lending. You're lending your good name. You're lending your credit to somebody. And even in parent and child relationships, it can become a source of contention. And so if someone wants you to help them to buy a car, for instance, with your good credit, like, this is probably going to be a bad idea for you. When you co-sign, you are telling the lender that you are going to be good for the money. And so instead, we would recommend that you kind of maybe see that ask from that individual as kind of the perfect way to start a conversation about how they're handling their money. What is it that they can actually afford? Hopefully that can lead to, I mean, if they feel comfortable enough asking you to co-sign, hopefully they're open enough to handle some additional conversations about money.
Right. Yeah. It's like, hey, mom, dad, can you help me co-sign for this brand new Honda Civic? And it's like, wait, slow down there. Let's see. You know what? I'm unwilling to do that. How much money do you have on hand?
Yeah.
Can I help you purchase a used one and find the right used car that's going to cost you a whole lot less? Like, that opens up a gateway for a better conversation.
Yeah. And I do think, I mean, that parent-child relationship, it is a little bit different. Like there's, I feel like there is a gray area here, especially if you have an adult child who maybe doesn't have a credit score and they are asking you, essentially, like, you know that they're good for it. You know that they are incredibly responsible, but you just want to make sure that you've had these conversations with them ahead of time. You want to make sure that they are open to sitting down periodically and taking a look at how those payments are going, that type of thing. And real quick too, Joel, this is actually another kind of awkward situation regarding the parent-child thing. What are your thoughts when it comes to adult children who are also hanging out with their parents, who are presumably adults, right? but like, when do you get to that point to where the child starts to pay their own way for things? Like, say you're going to go out, you're in a situation where you can both afford things, but it's kind of like, all right, do we revert back to the mom and dad take care of everything kind of mindset? Or where do you think that line is?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on both financial situations of both individuals. And I think as a parent, like, that's what I want to do for my kids. At some point, once they've proven that they're responsible with money, like, once they get out on their own, I think
once they have a solid job and they are earning their own income.
Once I'm like, okay, they know what they're doing, I want to treat them in that way.
Yeah.
But if it's one of those things where they keep coming back to the well, then I'm going to be less enthusiastic, I think, about, you know, paying for dinner or paying for anything for them.
But, totally. Yeah. Like, I think as a parent, like, as I see my kids get older, I mean, and we're like, we're like decades from this.
Right, light years away.
But I'm trying to imagine what this would feel like. And I think I would want them to show some initiative. You know, like say they're going to come back home to visit. They've got a solid, you know, decent paying job. I'm not expecting them to like pay a certain thing, but like for them just to be like, hey, you want me to pick up any groceries on the way back to the house for the weekend? Like that kind of thing.
That goes a long way in making you want to then. Yeah. Yes. And I feel the same thing like with my parents. Like they're in the place now where they offer to buy things, but then I pay for things too. Like
same thing. My parents, they still do that. They want to
cover
things.
They came down and stayed in the beach house that we rented this past summer, and they were like, "Hey, can we pay for some of it?" And I'm like, "No way! Like this is my treat." And it felt really good to do that. But then other times they'll pick up the tab at the restaurant when we all go out, and it's like that's super sweet.
Or it kind of depends on the situation, right? Like if you had like a few years of just really tough times at a job, maybe that you hated, for them to have offered that would have not only been incredibly generous, but maybe welcome on your part. So I think a lot of it does kind of come down to the individual relationship with you and your parents.
Exactly. Yeah. Timing, circumstances, that all really matters. Let's talk, Matt, about like more intense relationships. Well, not more intense, but
more romantic.
More romantic, and let's
finally.
We're going to get into marriage too, but let's talk about dating for a second. And it can be really hard to know what the etiquette should be like when it comes to dating. And Matt, just to be honest, we've been out of the dating world for quite a while at this point in time. You for like, 14, 15 years or 15 years, and me for 11, 12 years. And so we would suggest, though, getting the uncomfortable stuff out of the way up front. It's again, it's so much more awkward after the bill comes to talk about who is paying for what. And if you asked someone out, if you said, hey, I like you, can I take you out to eat or to wherever? offer to pay for the meal. That might sound old school, but it's our opinion that if you like someone enough to ask them out on a date and you plan something cool, then you pay for it.
Yes.
And of course, it doesn't have to be fancy. I mean, it probably can't be McDonald's, but it certainly doesn't have to be the Three Fork restaurant. But
somewhere between Three Forks and Plastic Fork.
Right, right, yes.
And Spork.
And if you don't have boatloads of dough for dating, though, that's okay, too. You could still date people. And so, yeah, we would say offer to pick up that love interest in your fancy, like, 2002 Honda Accord or whatever it is, and then go for a hike. But, yeah, or maybe meet for a picnic in a cool park on a beautiful day. You really don't need big money to wow someone who you've got a crush on. Sometimes sweet and goofy goes a lot further. And just putting your actual foot forward, like who you are, as opposed to putting like fake you forward and making it seem like you've got it all together. I think sometimes people appreciate that. Most of the time, people appreciate that authenticity, even if it doesn't seem like that's what's going to be received well.
Seems like you're putting a whole lot of stock in the sweet and goofy category.
That's all I got.
Someone's like talking to their friend. They're like, well, downside, he's broke. He doesn't make a lot of money, but on the upside, he's really sweet and goofy. And, you know, we feel that if, like, you're more or less, like, the one who's being treated to a date, like, definitely don't be the person who orders, like, the most expensive thing on the menu. And then also, like, the second, third, the fourth glass of wine. Instead, you know, be respectful. Take the lead of the person who you're on the date with. That certainly feels like the respectful kind of path to take, at least for, in my opinion. One other thing, I think it can be kind of sweet to offer to go Dutch as well, where you're both paying your way. But, you know, bottom line, we don't need to be the ones here to tell you that virtually everything you do and say feels like it's under kind of like the dating microscope when you're out on a date, right? But it is true that there are countless decisions that communicate something, specifically your thoughts on money, to a date while you're out on a date. And if you're the one ordering that fourth glass of wine, well, whether you realize it or not, you are communicating something to them. And so you just want to make sure that you are sending the right signals.
Yeah, and it goes both ways too, because if you are crushing on somebody and you've initiated multiple dates and you show up to every one of them with like a gift every time, it's like a really
which
nice,
can be nice
bouquet of flowers. Yeah And I like, here, I'm all about giving my wife gifts, bringing flowers home, stuff like that.
Oh, you've talked about your tulips.
But especially as you're getting to know somebody and you don't know them very well, if you're bringing something fancy every single time,
if it starts getting out of hand,
yeah, you're communicating that you're a big spender, whether or not you have your finances in shape. And a more frugal receiver of these gifts, they might not be used to you know, what these lavish gifts that you're bestowing.
Sure.
And that's okay. But if that's something that matters to you and, you know, hopefully you have your money game together, that's okay. Go for it. But yeah, more than anything else, just make sure that you're being yourself. I think sometimes in the dating world, it's easy to get caught up in spending more money than you feel comfortable doing. And, you know, if you're actually trying to find like a life partner, that's not really what you're going for. You want them to kind of recognize who you are, quirks and all, and somebody, I promise, somebody will love you for those things. You don't have to put on a front to win somebody over.
Sure. Yeah. So on a related note, we actually had a listener who emailed recently about dating etiquette, and they wanted to know about using a coupon on a date. So Joel, yeah, what does your money etiquette meter say in regards to that?
Okay. I don't want to date anybody or like be married to anybody who isn't cool with me using a coupon, right? So like we get
luckily
these,
you found the right person.
Right. So yeah. We regularly get these like mailers every month, and one of our favorite restaurants almost always has a coupon in there. It's right around the corner. It's a nice restaurant too. It's like a Two Fork place. I'm totally going to use the coupon if I've got it. And you know what? It's a nice place to eat out. And I think if you feel shame in the coupon game because of what someone else might think, then you need to get over it, because if you're a coupon type of person, use the coupon. And if the person that you're going on a date with isn't down with that, I think maybe it wasn't meant to be.
And again, like each one of these decisions is like these are instances where you're communicating to your date, to your partner, where you stand. If you are all about coupons, you want to make sure that you've got somebody who can join you on that coupon filled future. All right, Joel, let's take it to like the next level. Let's talk about kind of like,
I just want to clarify, I'm not a crazy extreme couponer. Okay.
No, honestly, I think this is like the only time in your life when you do use coupons, right?
It's very rare that I actually use coupons, but I mean, if I get one and it's a place that I love, I'm going
to
use it.
All right. Let's talk about marriage. Let's take it to the next level. There's this term that's kind of gotten more popular in recent years. And that phrase is getting financially naked. Have you? You've heard. Yeah, we've talked about this before.
For sure.
Once you've progressed beyond the dating phase, you're considering spending maybe some serious amount of time with an individual. Maybe you're thinking about getting married. Then it is time to get naked, financially speaking. And that's because we feel that relationships that are going to endure, they have a foundation of honesty. Like, they are based on transparency and honesty. And so, man, this is the period of time that, yes, it's important to understand how your partner communicates. And yes, it is important to be respectful. But man, I feel that all etiquette kind of goes out the window at this point in time. It's about kind of stripping it down to the numbers. And there's no hiding at this point in your relationship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you don't want to necessarily do this on the first date, right?
No, no, of course not.
Like, hey, what's your name again? By the way, here's my credit score and the amount of debt I'm in. That's a bad time
to
do it.
That would be a little too forward, mm-hmm. just like other ways you could be more forward with a date.
Right, but you've been dating for 8 or 9 months, and you've talked about getting serious, and marriage is maybe even on the radar, whatever. That's when you do want to start sharing some of these things. You don't want to hide even your financial mistakes. And you know what? Even those mistakes probably have bred some better habits, right? We all learn from those mistakes. So it's important to, yeah, even in that conversation, say, you know what? Here's all my student loan debt. But guess what? I've been listening to this podcast. I'm getting better with my money. And that's a good spur for a conversation. And you being open is going to make them feel more comfortable being open too. And that's a good thing because, yeah, who doesn't want to someone to love them warts and all? Like, that's what we always say. You know, we want someone to love all of us.
And for then, richer or for poorer, baby.
And then we hide a lot of who we are oftentimes. Yeah. And yeah, you don't want to continue down the path of a relationship if it feels superficial because, yeah, beyond this point, you're committed to each other and you know that your partner's problems are going to become your problems when you tie the knot. And so you want to know what you're actually getting into. And if this is a topic you've managed to avoid so far, let's say you have been dating someone seriously for quite a while, maybe wading into those waters with a conversation talking about employer benefits and 401ks is the way to go.
Just, like, ease on into it. Don't like immediately jump to like, how much debt do you have?
Right. Yeah. And you can start easy. You can start simple.
Yeah.
Get more comfortable as you go, getting a little bit deeper, but it's time. Like, if you are getting serious with somebody, you got to know their financial standing and you got to be honest about yours too.
100%, man. You know, like, honestly, the more financial secure I get, the more I get excited about being generous. And that's not something we're really talking a whole lot here. But, like, I've become more likely to pick up that breakfast check with a friend when we go out, or maybe even kind of tipping more than I usually would. And I think that's pretty cool. Like, it's where I want to see my money going. But realize that, like, I know that not everyone is in that position, and that's kind of what we're talking about here today. You know, when you're talking with your friends, it can be tough to hit all the right notes on the money etiquette front, but hopefully we feel that this episode will give you a little more confidence to maybe suggest something more affordable when you're making plans with your friends, or, you know, to create that custom tip amount for maybe a little bit less than the suggested amount, or maybe this will encourage you to talk about money a bit more freely just in general. And definitely upfront communication is going to be key when your etiquette moves involve others. We're all likely going to kind of come down on different sides of the issue based on our individual circumstances. And here's the thing, that is okay. Like, yeah, that is the thing that makes each of us unique, that makes each of us our own. But when it comes to our friends or our romantic partners, you want to make sure that you're having open and clear conversations about these things and that you're not afraid to talk about it.
Right. If I had Warren Buffett money, I'd probably tip $5 on every coffee I got. And
no, like, matter what,
50% on every meal I ate out, right?
So why not?
You know, as you reach different levels of, you know, financial fitness, financial independence, you can be, if you want, more generous with that money that's coming into your life. But I think too, some of these norms, Matt, like you said about choosing your own tip amount, like that, those norms are worth breaking. It's, yeah, and these are, some of these are barely established, not even new norms. And so why are we holding to them? Like, we're going to be booted out of civilized society if we don't, you know, and
you're not welcome here anymore.
Right. And the norms for so many people is to be in debt up to their eyeballs, because they are.
Oh yeah.
They're buying everything. They're being generous with money they don't even have sometimes. And you know, you and I, we're all about living differently, being even a little weird sometimes. You don't want to necessarily needlessly ruffle feathers, but we think that there are ways for you to handle your money well, to have solid etiquette, but not necessarily doing what everyone else around you is doing. And ultimately, communicate well, be honest with yourself and be honest with the people around you. I think if you are doing those things, if you're being authentically you, then you're going to come out okay. But Matt, let's get back to the beer.
This is a collaboration beer by Burial up there in Asheville, North Carolina, one of our favorites, a fantastic New England style IPA. And I was, I feel like I picked up on some kind of like tropical, some sort of fruit vibes, which you oftentimes don't get with a New England style IPA. And I was happy to see that on the label, it talked about some freeze-dried New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc skins. And so I'm kind of like, oh, okay, maybe that's where some of the, maybe a slightly more fruity notes came from. But it lent it this brightness that I appreciated and that you oftentimes don't find with a New England IPA.
Yeah, it also had some hops from New Zealand as well in this beer. And I feel like some of those hops from like literally the other side of the planet have some really interesting flavors. Some of the coolest IPAs I've had have had like Australian or New Zealand hops. And so this was a really good beer. I don't know what they're doing differently when it comes to hops down there. Maybe they can just grow stuff that we can't up here in the States. But yeah, this was a really good beer. And really, anytime Burial makes a beer, I'm down to try it.
Down there in New Zealand, they the hops grow counterclockwise and stuff, clockwise, right?
They grow like down into the ground like carrots.
Yeah, I'm glad you and I got to each enjoy one of these beers during this episode. And we will make sure to share a picture of this beer as well as any other additional resources or links that we may have mentioned during this episode up on our website at howtomoney.com.
Yeah, and of course, Matt and I, we appreciate you listening.
Especially to the very end of the episode like this.
Right, yeah. I mean, we wouldn't be anywhere without the kind folks, the awesome folks, at least the people we've met that listen. And the How to Money crowd is a special crowd. So thanks for always being there for the show. And yeah, we hope you have a great rest of your day. So Matt, that's going to do it. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.